I'm Micah. You're listening to KDVS Davis 90.3 FM, and this is Book It. The following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Today, well, every week on the show, we read a different book by various authors. Usually it's me and my co-host DJ Drainfield, but DJ Drainfield will not be here today. They're actually here in Davis, but they're not at the show. Because they did not read the book. But that's because I chose the books. Kind of, well, not last minute, but they weren't supposed to be here for the show anyways. But yeah, the book for this week that I chose is called Dead End Memories Stories by Banana Yoshimoto. Banana Yoshimoto is probably one of the most famous, or I would say probably one of the most famous Japanese authors in modern times. She's also super, super important female author. There's kind of like the three big like female authors of Japan. That's Banana Yoshimoto, Miyako Kawakami, and Sayaka Muruto. All three of them are super, super important. And super awesome. I feel like on this show, Book It, last quarter and this quarter, we had a problem where we didn't read a single book by a female author. So I decided for the rest of the weeks of this show, for this quarter, they were all going to be female. And I think for Book It next quarter, most of the books will probably also be written by female authors. Just because I feel like people don't really talk about female authors that much, you know. Banana Yoshimoto, super important, super awesome. Her most famous book is called Kitchen. I think I'm going to be reviewing that for Book It next quarter in one of the weeks. But like I said, today is Dead End Memory Stories. It's a collection of 5 short stories. And basically, it's a really interesting book. All 5 stories focus on women, a different woman. And kind of like what's going on in their life. So the protagonist experiences trauma or loss and tries to come to terms with it and move on. Their suffering is often lyrical and messy, but in an aesthetically pleasing way. And their story typically ends on a poignant point. I can't speak. No. The dreamy, sometimes surreal stories explore emotionally heavy hitting themes like life, love, death, happiness, identity, loneliness, grief, and grief. And it's a really interesting book. Honestly, while I was reading it, I teared up for a couple of the stories. They're very like tender. I feel like the stories are all like, there's some sort of like tenderness and warmth in all of them, even though a lot of them are like really, really sad. And like I said, it's kind of like each like female character is obviously struggling with something in their life. Some of them a little crazier than others. Like the first story is called House of Ghosts, and it focuses on this one woman. I don't think we learn her name, actually. I'm trying to remember her name, but I don't think we learn it. And in the story, it kind of focuses on her and this other man. His name is Ida. Let's actually look what his name is. I read this book like over a week and a half ago. It was a super, super good book. I think it's like over 200 pages. But I read it within like a day and a half, just because like it was really, really good. I couldn't put it down. But his name is Iwakura. So the story kind of focuses on her and Iwakura and their relationship with each other. They become friends because both of their parents own like a family establishment. Like the main character, her family owns a restaurant. And Iwakura, his family owns like a bakery where they sell cake rolls and things. And they're kind of family friends. And then they kind of start to have like, or their bond, they kind of start to have like a closer bond as they see each other like every day in college. Like they're like, I think they meet up every now and then, like they see each other walking home, things like that. So they start to form this closer bond. And one night she decides, or he invites her over to his apartment, and she decides to go. And at this apartment, he's talking to her. And they're basically, like, discussing what they want to do in life. And Irakura doesn't want to take on the family business, while the main character, she does want to take on her family business. She describes how her brother was supposed to be the one to take on the family business and continue the restaurant, but he left and basically decided that he wasn't going to do that. And so it kind of, like, became her thing, but she had, like, the opposite view that her brother did. And she was actually quite happy to do this. That was kind of her dream from the beginning, was to, like, work in their family restaurant and, like, own it, and, like, cook more. And so, like I was saying, Iwakura has the opposite dream of her. He doesn't want really to have anything to do with his family's business. He doesn't want to make cake rolls or things like that. He does enjoy, like, making pastries and things, but he just doesn't want to, like, be tied to that restaurant. And so they kind of talk about this at length, like, in Irakura's apartment. And by the way, Irakura lives in his uncle's, like, old apartment that's, like, run down, and it honestly is, like, set to be demolished soon, I think. And so they're talking or whatever, like, about their dreams, their life, whatever. And Irakura says something about the couple, and the couple he's referring to, they're ghosts. There's two ghosts that kind of live in the apartment, and he talks about them and how they basically are, like, doing their, like, laundry and, like, just household chores. But as he's talking about this, the main character, she can't see any of what he's talking about. She doesn't see any ghosts or whatever. And so they kind of talk about that for a little bit, and then she leaves. And then later on, I think she goes back and she meets with him again one time. And he basically tells her that he's decided to go to France. He's decided to leave to France, and he's going to go to, like, pastry school, I believe. And he's going to have a life for himself somewhere else. And as he's talking about this, she realizes that, like, she feels something. Like, she feels sad. And she says that she feels an ache in her heart as he's telling her this. And she slowly starts to realize that, like, this entire time, maybe she did love him. And this is something that she'd never really thought about until he had said that he was going to leave. And so he invites her back to his apartment. And as he says this, she knows why he's inviting her back. And so she knows this, and she decides to go anyways. And so they go back to his apartment, and they engage in activities that I cannot talk about on the air. And after that, as they're, like, laying in the futon, they're talking about, I guess, like, his life and things like that, and, like, what he wants to do. And she looks over, and she finally is able to see the ghost couple. And they're exactly as Iwakura has described. They're just doing household chores, like walking around, folding laundry, ironing, things like that. But she describes them as not being scary, but as having, like, some kind of warmth. And they kind of bring her comfort as, like, she's staring at them. But yeah, so she spends, like, the entire night and day with him, I believe. And then the next day she decides to leave, and she goes back to her home. And from there she talks to her mother, and she finds out that couple, they used to go to their restaurant quite often. They were an elderly couple, and they basically died together in that apartment. But yeah. So after that, she finds out this information, and over the next 2 weeks, she spends, like, a lot of time, or not a lot of time, she doesn't see Iwakura for a while, and then she sees him randomly one day, and he talks to her, and they decide to go to his apartment, and again, they do things, and they, yeah, he's basically talking to her about how he's going to leave, and she realizes that, like, she loves him, and it's a really sad, like, realization, because he's gonna leave, and she's probably not gonna see him ever again. She talks to him one last time, and then I think he leaves, like, a day or two later, and he goes to France. And so she, like, kind of goes on and does her own thing. And so the story skips forward a little bit. And we go to, like, I think it's 8 years in the future. This whole time she's taken over her family's restaurant. She's cooking and things like that. And Iwakura has been in France this entire time. She has not seen him a single time. And then one day, I think she's, like, doing something. I think she's, like, walking or something. And she sees him. And he comes up to her, and he recognizes her. And he starts a conversation with her. And I think they go back to her family's restaurant. And they basically, oh no, they go to a coffee shop. And they basically have, like, a really long conversation or whatever. And at this time, she, the main character, she's like, they say that she's like about to get married. She hasn't been engaged to whatever, but the person that she was seeing was somebody that was working in her family's restaurant. And it had gotten to the point where like they're probably thinking about marriage and things like that, or getting serious. And we find out that Iwakura is single as well. And they basically talk about how like she says that it's like it was like fate for them to come back and meet each other again. We learn that Iwakura has moved back to Japan following his mother's death. She dies of a heart attack. And he decides that he finally wants to take on his family's business and sell cake rolls and things like that. And so this one kind of ends on a happy note. The two of them end up getting married, and they end up like later on deciding to like kind of combine their restaurants, where her family's restaurant will sell things from like cake rolls and stuff from his family's like bakery and business. It's really a sweet story. I think it might be my favorite one out of all of five. And it's really interesting. But yeah, I've been talking for a long time, so I'm going to take like a 2-minute break maybe, and then I'll come back. But in the background, it's just Guts from Berserk's theme song. Shout out DJ Drainfield and DJ Sunday Gravy. Okay. Okay, I'm back. But yeah, okay. The next short story in this book, Dead in Memories by Banana Yoshimoto, is called Mama. And it's... This one I quite liked as well. And the character from the last part of the... What's it called? The last story was called... I believe her name is Tomo. Tomo-chan. Right? Yeah, I think so. The next story is called Mama, like I said, and this one is really interesting. So the main character, her name is Mimi, and we kind of like follow her. The beginning of the story kind of starts off like really interesting. They kind of like, what's the word? Suspenseful is the word I'm looking for, because she says like, what does she say? Her intuition talking, and that she should have listened and stopped. But basically, Mimi, she decides one day to go to the cafeteria at her job, and to get food, as one does. And she ends up getting the curry. And as she's eating this curry, she starts... It's fine, right? Like, she also notes that it tastes sort of bitter a little bit. And so she eats her food or whatever, and she goes back to work. And she works at a publishing company. And as she's working, she starts to feel really sick. So at one point, she gets up and goes to the bathroom and starts to, like, throw up and convulse on the floor. And she basically, like, blacks out after that. And then she wakes up in the hospital, and we learn that she was poisoned. We learn that one of her disgruntled coworkers, he, after, like, having a failed relationship with another woman in the company, he becomes kind of, like... angry, and so he decides to poison the curry, and he ends up putting arsenic, I believe, or not arsenic, sleeping, he puts a bunch of, like, sleeping, like, pills, I think they're, like, crushed up sleeping pills, into the curry. I mean, he basically poisons her, and they talk about how, like, if he had chosen a stronger poison, she would have died. She wakes up in the hospital, having been poisoned. And we learned that her liver is, like, in a really bad state because of, like, all the, like, sleeping pills that he put into the curry. And it's really interesting. But yeah, so then after that, she starts to talk about, like, her life a little bit, and how she kind of sort of regrets even going to the cafeteria. And she starts to talk about like how her, like her family, her grandparents, she's raised by her grandparents, and she has a fiance, or not a fiance, a boyfriend, because, what was I gonna say? He's not her fiance yet, because she decided to do like a 1-year trial with him. And after, if like after 1 year, if they like work well together and live well together, they can get married or engaged. So he's like her fiance, boyfriend, husband sort of thing. It's kind of complicated. But yeah, so she's poisoned by her coworker. It wasn't meant for her. Like, it wasn't intentionally put there for her. She just happened to be the one to get the curry. And so she basically almost dies. And she's in the hospital or whatever. And after she gets released or discharged, she like goes back to work kind of quickly, very quickly, actually. And so as she goes back to work, she thinks that she's completely fine. Like, she talks about how like she's completely fine. There's really nothing wrong with her. She just doesn't enjoy the attention or the pity that people are giving her. And she's not upset at the man who poisoned her. His name is Mr. Yamazo. And she says, each time I saw my family blaming Mr. Yamazo or the company or getting angry or crying for me, it made me think hesitantly that this was how it felt to be loved. So she's not upset with the man. And she's not really, she thinks she's fine because she has like all the support around her, her grandparents, her boyfriend / fiance. And so she thinks she's 100% fine until one day, she goes and meets up with an author. She's an editor. And she's basically talking to him about his book or whatever. And so the author and his wife start asking her questions because her poisoning had been on the news. It had been a big sensational thing. So they start asking her questions. And she's sitting there. And as they're asking her these questions, she starts to feel really upset. And she doesn't seem to know why. And she's just getting really, really upset. And she talks about how she wishes the questions would stop. She just randomly grabs the teacup in front of her and throws it, smashes it to the ground and breaks it. And then she starts like sobbing on the ground in front of the author and the wife. And the wife goes up to her and starts comforting her. It's a very beautiful scene. She puts her into her lap, like her head into her lap, and like strokes her hair. And she's basically comforting her. And they're telling her that it's all right, that they don't really care that she broke their cup, because she's sobbing and apologizing and saying that she's going to get them a new cup. But like I said, they don't really care. And she notes that they're being really, really kind to her. And so as she's sobbing or whatever, she realizes that she's not okay. She was never okay. And that she just was putting, kind of like forcing everything away, and pretending that she was completely fine. And so it had just all boiled up to that point, where like the author and the wife asking her questions was kind of her last straw. So after that, she goes back to work or whatever, and she's afraid that she's gonna get in trouble or fired, but the author and the wife are very, very kind, and they don't report her anything, because they understand that, like, she's going through something really, really bad, and they apologize to her and tell her that they're sorry for asking questions like that, especially, like, after it hadn't been a long time from, like, when she was poisoned. And so they talk to another man who works in the company, and he goes up to her and speaks to the main character. Her name's Mimi, and basically tells her that the author and the wife, they're not upset with her or anything. They're not going to tell anybody about it. They just really hope and like want to know that she's okay. They're genuinely very, very worried for her. And this brings her some kind of comfort. And she decides after that, after that, she goes home. Because her fiance is on like a work trip, so she goes to her grandparents' house where she was raised by them. Notably, her father died. These are her grandparents are her father's parents, and her mother, we learn, was sent away, or she was taken out of her mother's custody because her mother was abusing her. She was like lighting cigarettes out on her, or whatever. But the thing is, Mimi doesn't really remember this, and what she does remember is like fond memories of her mother. But then we start to realize, as she's like sitting, like laying in her futon and in her room at her grandparents' house, she starts to remember like some slight little things of her mother hurting her, breaking her arm, and things like that. And then she's not crying or anything, but then she has a really bad dream, or not a bad dream. She has a dream, and it's not a bad dream actually. It's of her mother being kind to her and her father. And so she wakes up from this dream and she just starts sobbing, like really, really loudly. She's sobbing, crying. It's like really, really terrible. And so from that moment, she decides that she needs to take a break. And so she decides to take a break from her job. When she has the dream, in the passage, it says, "When I woke up for a second, I could still vividly feel the sensation of my arms around my mother's neck and my chest against hers. I was overcome by such a deep yearning that I cried as much as I ever cried in my life. In my old room at Grandma and Grandpa's, with just a wall separating me from where they were sleeping, I wailed." And yeah, so she cries all night. And it's really, really sad. And yeah, so after this, she decides that she needs to take a break. People had been telling her that she should take a break or whatever, and she kind of ignored it because she thought she was completely fine. But so she decides to take her break, and realizes that like this is the best thing for her. Let me see. There's like a quote I wanted to read here, but I can't find it. Yeah, but it's okay. This story is really, really sweet. And it's very, very, it's really sad as well, just because she's kind of going through a lot, and throughout the story, she starts to realize that she's not okay, even, like, before, like, when her mother left her, or not left her, but, like, abused her, and when she was taken away and her father's death, she realizes that she hadn't processed any of that, and the poisoning, she kind of starts to say, was kind of, like, something that she needed in her life, even though it was really, really bad, and she almost died, it kind of freed her from herself, if that makes sense. And so she kind of starts to appreciate what's happened to her. But yeah, anyways, the next story is called Not Warm at All. This one is, I think, the shortest one in the book. Is it? Yeah. So it follows the main character. She's a writer. Let me see. I think... Yeah, okay. Yeah, so the main character, she's a writer. And the story is really, really short because it's about a boy that she used to be friends with when she was a child. And so her family owned, like, a bookstore or whatever, and she grows up in this bookstore. And she has this friend. His name's Makoto. And they're quite young. They're, like, in elementary school age or whatever. She talks about how, like, she spent time with him or whatever. He comes from a really affluent family. But despite that, he would come over to hers all the time and spend a lot of time with her. And she talks about how their bond, like, how close their bond was. She notes that, like, he's basically her first love as well. And they're super, super close. And he loves spending time with her family or whatever. And he's a frail little boy. And the story is really, really sad because she talks about how the last day she sees him, he doesn't want to go home. He cries about not wanting to go home. He wants to stay with her and her family, to the point where, like, her family calls and asks if he can spend the night, but they say no because the next day, I believe they have, like, a family event or something going on. So the butler comes to pick him up and takes him home. And the next day they learn that he's died, basically. So his mother essentially kidnaps him from his home and takes him and drives off a cliff with him in the car and kills herself, him. And we learned that before she did that, she tries to kill Makoto's father, but fails. And then that's when she kills herself and her son. And it's a really, really sad story. And she talks about how, like, she wished she could have seen him grow up. And yeah, so that's the shortest one in the book. The next one is called Tomo-chan's Happiness. This one, I believe, is... let me see. This one is also super short, I think. What is this one? Smoking a cigarette. Okay, wait. This one is super, super... I think this one is the shortest one. What does it mean to travel for work? I'm sorry. I'm trying to find out where this... this one is basically just... Oh, goodbye, goat. Yo, DJ DK. Sorry. Okay, this one is basically Tomo-chan wanting to go to Hokkaido, and talking about her father. It's a super, super short story as well. not my favorite. I think it might be my least favorite in this entire book. Yeah, super, super short. I'm not even going to really touch it very much, just because it's... like I said, it's definitely not my favorite. And the last story, probably the most important one, because it's titled Dead End Memories, as the book is titled. This one is really interesting. I believe this one is... Let me see. Yeah, okay, so this one, the main character... Hello, Mimi, wait. Is this what I think? Okay, yeah. So the main character in this story, basically, she finds out one day... Okay, so she's living in one city, and her husband at the time, or her fiancé at the time, is, like, working out of, like, at a different city. He kind of travels back and forth, and she talks about how he starts, like, coming to visit less regularly, but she doesn't seem to mind this at all. It doesn't really bother her, and she doesn't really think about it. She doesn't start thinking about it until her sister starts mentioning things to her and asking her where he's at, why he isn't visiting, things like that. And so after a conversation with her sister, she starts to realize that maybe she should go visit him, but she's kind of deluding herself into thinking everything's fine. She convinces herself that, like, he's just busy. That's why he hasn't visited. But we find out that he hasn't visited in a long time. He hasn't visited the entire summer. He hasn't talked to her. He hasn't messaged her. No contact with her. And so she decides to drive up to the city he's working at. And she knows his address. So she drives up. She sees that his car is in the driveway, or parked outside, I believe. And she knows his car because she paid for the car herself. And she goes to his apartment that he has there, that he goes to. She knocks on the door, and a woman answers. And she talks to the woman, and, like, she invites her in. And she finds out that he's engaged to this woman, and they're gonna get married soon. And so her whole life kind of crumbles in that moment. And as she's talking to this woman, the woman is being very nice to her. She's even like, oh, she says that his name's Takahashi, I believe. She even says, oh, Takahashi mentioned you. It's crazy. And he ends up coming home during that, like, talk. And he basically tells her that he was gonna wait till winter to tell her about it. And so, kind of distraught, she leaves immediately. She goes, she decides she can't even go home. So she ends up living at her uncle's, like, old apartment above a bar that he owns, and she becomes friends with a man named Nishimiya. And basically, he kind of helps her to heal throughout the time that she spends in the bar. There's no romantic feelings between them. It's purely a platonic relationship, but he's a very kind person, and he has a very interesting outlook on life. And so he kind of, like, heals her at, like, in the months that she's staying there. And so one day she decides finally that it's okay for her to go home. And as she's leaving, she talks to him, and he gets her car back for her from Takahashi. It's really sweet. And they talk to each other, and they both know that this is the last time they'll ever see each other again. Because he's moving to Tokyo, and she's moving back home. And so they say goodbye to each other. It's a very beautiful story of, like, friendship, and, like, healing and things like that. I think it's definitely my favorite, this one and the first one, and maybe even Mama. I think they're all really good, except for the Tomo-chan one, I think is what it's called. But yeah, no, I love this book, Dead End Memories by Banana Yoshimoto. Super awesome. Banana Yoshimoto, awesome author. Like I said, probably one of the best female Japanese authors in the modern times, maybe. I love her books a lot. We'll be reading Kitchen next quarter by her. But next week, I believe, is All the Lovers in the Night by Mieko Kawakami. My goat. We read one of her books last week called Heaven. So stay tuned for that if you'd like. I'm Micah, and I'll be back next week for Book It. Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Look out now. This is the Diz. Dizzy Gillespie, that is. And let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDBS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out. Ow! This is Diz signing off.
Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. It's a September 11th edition, typically a somber day here in the United States of America. It was just 23 years ago, and a day ago, or 23 years from tomorrow, I should say, that I hosted this very radio show. It was the day after September 11th. We played some Samuel Barber music. I talked with the People magazine journalist Oliver Jones about what had happened. All flights were grounded. People were in a state of shock. And the mourning for the thousands who had lost their lives had begun. I read this morning that more firefighters have lost their lives to illnesses associated with the cleanup after September 11th than lost their lives on that day. I hope that we're continuing to do what we can for them and that we're remembering them and all of those who died on September 11th, 2001. My name is Dr.